On this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, I sit down with Scott Carson to uncover investing in cash flow using notes.
Hey Mavericks, this is Ava Baukamp, and this episode of Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks is brought to you by Legacy Impact Investors. We are an industrial investment firm located in cash flow country, the Midwest. We strive to shield off risk and beat inflation, all while producing predictable cash flow. We curate real estate investment opportunities for busy professionals and other real estate investors seeking passive income. To learn more about what we do and connect with me, go to www.legacyimpactinvestors.com.
Maverick, noun, unusual person, a visionary, leader, go-getter, an independent thinker. They see the vision for their life and pull that future towards them with an unyielding belief that things can and must be better. They achieve what most won't. Innovative, influential, daring, and direct, with a remarkably high tolerance for taking calculated risk. A foe to the status quo. This is Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks. Your host, Neil Timmons, has been involved with over $300 million in real estate transactions. He's a published author, commercial property investor, and real estate syndicator. This show is for those who want to learn how to earn passive income through real estate investing. Now, here's your host, Neil Timmons.
Welcome to Passive Real Estate Investing with Mavericks, where we provide you actionable steps to grow your passive income and become job optional. Today, during this episode, you're going to get to discover investing in cash flow using notes. Now, for those of you who are new, I'm your host, Neil Timmons. I love passive income from real estate. Before I introduce you to today's Maverick, I want to make requests. At any point, you like what you hear, well, give us a thumbs up. Be certain to subscribe to the show, never miss a valuable episode. And if you love what you hear, well, give us a written review. Plus, be sure to look at the description of this episode. We've packed it with thousands of dollars in free resources. Today, we've got the privilege to learn from a person with 2 decades experience and over $1 billion in notes. Now, prior to his career on the note buying side, he was a mortgage originator. All of it changed, of course, in 08 when the market went upside down and he got introduced to a tremendous opportunity. I would describe today's Maverick, someone who's absolutely passionate about helping, about educating others to help them get to their next level. Today's Maverick, I've got Scott Carson here with me. Scott, say welcome to the show. For the audience's sake, who are you? Where are you from? What do you do?
Yeah, glad to be here, Neil. Thank you so much for having me. And for those out there listening, I'm known across the country as the Note Guy, but an active real estate investor and entrepreneur for over 20 years. And I dive into the world of note investing. That's why I'm called the Note Guy. And for those that don't know, I buy debt. I buy mortgage debt on residential commercial properties, both performing and non-performing. We talk about the difference of that, but we buy it for cash flow so I don't have to deal with rehabs or toilet stands and trash heads. I like the passivity of it and bought over $1 billion in debt in the last 20 years. I call Austin, Texas home, but I buy in about 30 different states across the country. So that's just a little bit about me. So
tell me, you know, HGTV doesn't put a lot of television shows on about buying debt. So there's not a lot of folks who are going to know exactly what that is. Or how about this? How'd you get into it?
So it's funny thing is I started a mortgage company with a buddy of mine and our sponsoring broker had sold off portfolios of mortgages to Wall Street and stuff like that. And then when everything hit the fan in 2008 during the Great Recession, I was very lucky to have a couple mentors that had bought a lot of debt during the 80s days. And so they taught me the aspect of buying notes. And most people, when they hear note investing, they think of, oh, I'm going to sell a house on terms. I'm going to offer owner financing. I'm going to carry the debt. That's one aspect of it. What I do is further up the food chain, and we buy notes or mortgages direct from banks and hedge funds. So I had kind of like a 3.5-4 year apprenticeship as we ran this mortgage company from 2004 to 2008. And then when everything hit the fan, I just stopped on the origination side and just started calling banks and lenders that I dealt with to see if they had any notes on their books they were looking to sell off that was non-performing. And we started buying an individual note here and there, residential. We bought a note on an apartment complex that we flipped. We bought some stuff very discounted because the borrowers hadn't paid in a while and were able to work it back out with them to get them back on track for cash flow, passive, and others that we've had to foreclose and go from there. So that's kind of a unique experience diving in the world. There's only like 3 or 4 folks in the country that teach this kind of niche of real estate investing. And we've bought over $1 billion in debt and helped people stay in their houses is what we really prefer to do. Instead of rehabbing the property, I like to rehab the borrowers. Now, that doesn't mean send them to the Betty Ford Clinic to dry out. Some of them do need to go there, but just trying to, when we buy that debt from a bank, we're usually buying it at a substantial discount. And then it's up to us to make our money to work with a borrower to get them back on track. And that's why I thought your audience would find value in this, because you can buy this debt that's reperforming or once non-performing.
Let's talk about that. There's typically two sides to the debt, performing debt and non-performing debt. One side is a little more active. Fair to say that non-performing debt becomes more active than the passive side of it. There's multiple ways to participate in a passive basis in the debt world. But talk to me about the differences between those and maybe what you in over the course of your 20 years and $1 billion. What percentage is in each bucket?
Yeah, so we have bought probably 90% of what we've bought has been non-performing. And by non-performing, that means the borrower hasn't paid their mortgage, whether it's a residential property or commercial property, in at least 6 months usually. Sometimes 6 years or longer they haven't paid in a while because the bank has kind of kicked the can down the road and not wanted to foreclose in a variety of ways. Or that mortgage has been sold off multiple times to different institutions or investors like me. So the non-performing note, we buy that at a big discount. And we prefer to buy stuff that's occupied, so I don't have to go in and rehab it. And our biggest goal, since we buy that debt usually like a 50% discount, give or take a little bit, depending on where it's at in the foreclosure process, is that we'll reach back out to the homeowner and say, hey, what's going on, Jim? What happened? Tell me your country western song. Grandma got run over by a reindeer. Okay, you got kicked out of work. Your dog got hit by a train. Whatever it might be.
Yep.
Let's get you back on track. Do you want to stay or do you want to go? If you want to stay, you got to pay. If you want to go, that's fine. You can either sign the property over to us now because we're now the lender. Mm-hmm. We can try to sell it like on a short sale or sell it traditionally. Or if you won't play ball with us and want to be a pain in the ass, then we're closed. Like, because we were the bank and have the same rights to.
Yep.
And that takes some working. The great thing about it is not me going and knocking on doors and all the stuff that we bought. There are servicing companies that handle a lot of that communication with the borrower. Once you decide to go the legal route to foreclose, then you hire attorneys in each state that you own debt in. And then they'll handle the heavy lifting and report back to you if the borrower comes to the table, wants to do a modification or something like that.
Got it. All right. Talk to me about so there's plenty of people on who are listening to this going, okay, I get it all, but there's no way I'm doing that. So
right.
Two things. There's typically avenues. Talk to me about the performing side. And then there are certainly people who put some sort of fund structures together out there, whether it's you or a variety of folks to participate in people like what you just described.
Exactly. And performing notes, you can buy performing notes that are either been performing from the get-go. Somebody sells a house on owner financing, they want to sell the note off because they want to receive cash in after 12 months. And so you can buy into those deals on different trading platforms or from their note investors. I mean, you could literally go to LinkedIn and look for like note sellers or note investors and find a lot of people that way. And that can make you a good 6, 8, 10% return or more, depending on how the underlying note is written. Now, there's also kind of a third level that kind of bridges the two gaps. So our biggest goal when we buy non-performing stuff is to get it reperforming.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we get the bar back on track, making 12 months of on-time payments, it's now considered as reperforming. And we would sell that to people that are looking for a 10 or 12% cash and cash return. Because we bought it at 50.
Yep.
We get the bar, make a year of payments. Now we could turn around and sell that back to Wall Street or other investors at 85, 90, because it's now considered reperforming. And so we got a year cash flow plus a good 25, 35% bump above what we paid for the asset. Yep. But it also leaves a good chunk of the profits on the bone now to that note buyer who looks for a passive return. They hire a servicing company, collect payments. The borrower's got some skin in the game because they put a chunk down. They made 12 months of payments. They don't want to default. They get over their hiccups. And you can make oftentimes a 10 to 12% return by buying this reperforming stuff because you're still going to buy it 80 cents on the dollar. That leaves a good chunk of equity in case the bar decides to fall off the wagon again. You have to foreclose.
Yeah. Nope. That makes sense. Now, you're probably seeing every people, there's lots of ways to invest in this. Literally just, I mean, obviously everybody can always invest in their own name, but IRAs are probably, I see a lot of people in this kind of space with IRAs, 401k, self-directed stuff, 401ks, any sort of retirement plan.
It's totally true. When I talk to the folks at the different self-directed IRA companies, I always like to ask them that too. Like, do you have an idea? And they literally tell me about 40 to 50% of what they have under management, as far as invested funds, is going into some sort of note, whether A, they're offering financing or buying a note. it's in the note business. And I always say most people are already in the note business. They're just on the wrong side of the payment stream. If you've got a mortgage, a car payment, credit card, you've got money going out, not money coming in. Yeah. And that's why you like notes, because the cash flow comes in without having to worry about 12 cents of trash out, worrying about winterization of a house, if it's vacant, or dealing with a deadbeat tenant in some cases, stuff like that. But it's a, if you're using your self-directed IRA money, great. You just hire a servicing company at $15 to $25 a month, collect payments, and then wire the funds from their account once they receive the check or money orders and stuff like that straight into your IRA account. And we've got a ton of students and investors out there that are doing that. And of course, there's funds you can buy and buy into, $50,000 to $100,000. You invest in those type of funds. There's also crowdfunding platforms too that allow you the opportunity to invest in performing notes. That's another thing to look at. And of course, people think you have to need to have a lot of money if you want to do this yourself. You can also go out and buy individual one-off notes too. $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 can get you into one, two, or three of them, depending on where at in the country. Obviously, $100,000 in California might buy you a doghouse, but that might buy you a really nice house in like Cleveland or someplace like that too.
Right. Yep. No, that makes sense. You know, one of the things you mentioned is servicing. Servicing is, my understanding, there's a whole bunch of rules and regulations relative to residential, single family, conventional loan servicing. Is that fair to say? And then maybe talk about, if you don't do it, you just go out and hire it. Is it pretty easy to get that serviced?
Yeah, it is really easy to find a servicer. Most states want you to be a licensed debt collector if you're collecting any type of mortgage debt. Well, the get out of jail clause, if you don't want to go and get the license from the state and pay them, is to hire a servicing company who's already licensed in that state to collect. And not every servicing company is going to be licensed in all 50 states, because they may not be collecting in New York or New Jersey, which is expensive to get a license there, or they may not be collecting in other states. But you need a servicing company, if anything, because you don't want to be dealing with a paper trail that having to create these documents and make sure that every penny is accounted for and counting. That's what the servicing company is there. When they get it in, they adjust it. They have a payment history, payment trail, stuff like that, so that you don't have to worry about it. You just collect your monthly payment. But yeah, it's pretty easy. Like a performing note will run you $15, you know, $25 a month, depending on who the servicer is. A non-performing note, maybe from $25 to $95 a month, because they're going to be doing more work on that asset for you. So that's the great thing about it, is there's a few states that want you to be separately mortgage broker licensed or separate license on top of your servicing company. I'm not buying a lot of the states because there's not a lot of good stuff. We're talking like on the West Coast, like California, Washington State, Oregon State want you to do that. I know a lot of note investors aren't buying there because it's not very lender friendly.
Sure.
In those areas. And they also want, it's expensive to get a license there. So we just don't buy there. Georgia is a state that wants you to be a licensed mortgage broker. So that could be an expensive license to get, unless you're using your self-directed IRA to buy the note, then that's the exception to the deal. I don't know how they track that, but if you're using your self-directed IRA to buy it, you're okay. We also will partner with an existing investor buddy of ours who already got a mortgage broker's license, and we'll just pay him a 10% cut of the cash flow that comes off that to basically run it through their LLC, basically.
Sure. Yeah, interesting. All right. So you've done a ton of these. There's certainly a lot for somebody to learn, especially if they're going to get real active. Maybe give me the top two, maybe three red flags when it comes to underwriting, when it comes to buying one's first note. What should send them running for the hills?
Never buy a note you don't want to end up owning the property on. Okay. The cash flow can look great on paper. I mean, that's what we're looking at in spreadsheets most of the time. We call them a tape in our industry, but a spreadsheet, which will have like 60 cells across it, from the address to the borrower's information to their social to 12 to 24 months of payment history, plus all the terms of the notes and other stuff like that. If it looks great, I mean, if the cash flow looks great, obviously then look at the property. If the numbers don't make on a spreadsheet, I don't mean go to looking at a property. So the first thing is, hey, look, numbers look good, but the house is a piece of crap. It's in a rough area. Don't buy it, because if you've got to take that property back, it now becomes a pain in the ass and you don't want to do that. Okay. That's the first thing. Secondly, don't fall in love with equity. A lot of investors, real estate investors, get in the note business. They look at the equity and they're like, oh, there's a ton of equity in this deal. Well, you're the bank. You're not the property owner in this. So you don't actually own the equity. And I see investors that get into this and they overbid because they're used to bidding at 70% of MAO minus repairs and that formula. Well, you're buying the debt. The equity actually doesn't belong to you. It actually belongs to the homeowner. And so you have to keep that in mind when bidding. Another thing is always check taxes. That's a big thing that can trip people up if you're not checking how much you own in back taxes, or if there's a tax certificate sale or a tax sale like that. Know your foreclosure timeframes. Each state's a little bit different. I mean, we do things fast here in Texas, like 21 days. I mean, fast foreclosures, fast highways, fast executions. You know what I mean? And then you look at like New York, New Jersey. New York can take you 3 years to foreclose. It doesn't make any sense to buy up there unless you really live there, and it still doesn't most of the time. So know that. I always like to tell folks, if you're starting off, avoid the rural properties. Stay in a major city, usually, you know, 50,000 or greater, gives you plenty of realtors to drive by, or rehab people if you got to do, or anybody, buyers potentially, or borrowers that can get into the property. So those are just a couple of our quick high item things that we kind of look at due diligence wise on the front end to help us eliminate a lot of stuff.
Are you a passive real estate investor seeking financial freedom? Well, today's market's unique and it's ever changing. Now is the time to get educated on how to strategically invest in commercial real estate for long-term financial freedom. Grab your copy of How to Passively Invest in a Changing Economic Environment. Go to www.mavericksinvest.com. Talk to me about, you know, you and I are, this is the last one that I'm doing for this year. We are taping this just at the end of 2023. So this will roll out here in just a month or so. So for everybody listening, I'm curious for you, what are you most excited about in 2024?
So it's everybody's word is so excited about, oh, there'd be more foreclosures or more distressed assets, distressed property in 2024. And I've already been seeing that for 6 months, if not a year. Now, I'm most excited that I think lenders and banks are going to have to come to the determination that they are going to have to take a bigger discount to sell the debt off. You're not going to see this huge wave of foreclosures that everybody keeps talking about. It's just not going to happen because the banks know that they can sell the debt off 6 to 12 months ahead of a foreclosure sale to investors like me or funds like what we do. Yep. And they can get their money in and go out and lend that all out and how they leverage that.
Yep.
We're seeing more stuff. It's always interesting, Anil, when I get phone calls or emails from banks and asset managers asking me when I'm buying. It's usually the other way around, me reaching out to them with an email or LinkedIn. But when you start getting people, hey, can you give me a bid on this? Or, oh, we can't take that. I'm like, well, you can take that now, what I'm offering you, or it'll be less in 90 days or less than 6 months. And so there's been this gap kind of between what banks and lenders have wanted to sell stuff that was distressed versus what investors want to buy. And that gap's been getting smaller and smaller as we get to the end of the year. So as we get into 2024, I expect us to see a lot of stuff hitting the markets. A great thing that I look at too, that might be funny, is I look at job openings and banks, and the internal departments that handle the note sales are like the special assets managers or the secondary marketing managers. Those are the two big job titles. We've seen a huge dramatic increase in both of those job openings at banks in the last 12 months. So that tells you that banks are staffing up because they see the tsunami of distressed debt coming down that pipeline.
Are you seeing that in more in residential or commercial, both?
We see it in both, actually. Well, obviously, commercial has been hit hard depending on the asset class. Obviously, office has been hit hard. Multifamily has been hit hard because of the interest rate hikes and people not being able to refinance after they regentrified the assets. That's a thing that's been going on for a little while now. It's a surprise with that. But we're seeing that on the residential side, too, of just defaults. People, when you look at the numbers and economics and the recession we've got and inflation and stuff like that, say somebody needed an extra 12 to 15 grand a year just to pay for the basics of what's going on. And so while people have low interest rates and all this stuff, and they've got a property, they may not necessarily want to sell that property because they can't move into anything else. So we're starting to see more defaults from people that just aren't getting by. Now, it's not going to be in like places like hot in a lot of cases. Austin is one of the hottest markets where I live. I don't see much Nashville I was just in. But you will see some stuff in those areas. You'll see stuff more on tertiary markets and stuff like that for the most part, but make great investments. But we're seeing increase in tapes, as we call it, or spreadsheets that come out from these banks or sellers.
Yeah, interesting. Let's do this. I want to move on to the final segment, what I call the final four. What do you think holds most passive investors back from hitting their personal next level, whatever that next level happens to be?
Confidence and knowledge. I would say that the two are directly related. The more knowledgeable you are, the more confident you are in a thing. And I think one of the biggest fallacies that investors face these days is, and we see this everywhere. I've traveled the country and spoken to investment clubs across the country, and you go to your local like investment club, and every month or every other week, there's some new guy or some new strategy coming through. And it confused mine as a mind that says no in a lot of cases. So I'm always laughing because I see investors that I'm going to take this new class and put this new tool in my tool belt. I'm going to this new class and they literally got like a tool belt full of like 50 different strategies, but they never implement one of them or never give enough time for the marketing and one of these strategies to work. So that's the big thing is you got to have patience. You got to stick with something for a while. You also got to realize what's truly working in your market that you're buying in or the markets you're looking to buy some stuff in. So that's the biggest thing is investors want to do something. And now that this is coming out in Q1, I mean, you're going to see investment clubs that are just going to be always the busiest time of the year is the Q1. People right. going to do something.
Right.
Here's the biggest thing. Before you ever spend a dollar on a class or an education, ask people that are closing deals. Hey, when was your last deal that you closed? Is this still relevant for my market? Will this work in my market? Not everything works in every market out there. And what are your goals? And what is the time commitment that you have to achieve those goals? If you're working 50 hours a week, you don't have a lot of time to go knocking on doors or dealing with turnkey rentals or stuff like that, unless you hire property management in a lot of cases. So you got to keep that in mind. You learn to delegate and outsource the things that you can't do. And that's the hard thing I think a lot of investors get into is that we are such control freaks. I want to touch everything. Well, you don't need to touch everything because you're just going to screw it up in a lot of cases. So that's the thing. Focus on one or two strategies that are working in today's market. Like notes are great. That works in up and down stuff. A big thing could be like subject to taking over properties with existing financing, investing in some funds. Just knowing what's going on in the market. Talk with folks in your local market that are closing deals and then give it time. They say you got to be perform 10,000 hours or something to be an expert. You don't need that much of my time, but don't be afraid to get in and market for deals. Spend a little bit of money, whether it's whatever marketing aspect it is, give it time and realize it's just going to take a little bit of time for the seeds to germinate before you can start harvesting. Don't be impatient like most people. They don't give anything an opportunity and they just run from one thing to another thing and another thing. That's why you have frustrated investors because they spend all this money and never really invested their own selves into that process of finding deals.
What are you passionate about outside of real estate?
Oh man, what am I passionate about outside of real estate? Last year, I got very passionate about my health, dropped 60 pounds.
Good for you.
Basically kicked diabetes, took my A1C, my blood sugar from where it was full-blown diabetes down to normal levels in last year. So that's one thing I've been very passionate about. Passionate about animals, enjoy travel as well too, like that. So just really, I don't have kids. I have the four-legged kind, the furry kind, you know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah.
But I love helping people close their deal. I love helping people and that light that goes off when they get a little confident and say, hey, I can do this. This is easier than I thought it would be. Or, hey, I can raise capital. This is easier than I thought it would be. This is the stuff that really drives me wild and gets me excited about things during the day.
Your favorite book?
Oh, easy. Hands down, Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill and rewritten by Sharon Lecter a few years back. If you haven't read it, it is a story of Napoleon Hill, who's the author of Think and Grow Rich, sitting down with the devil to ask the devil how the devil is successful. And he responds back, well, I throw things in front of people. I give them that shiny object syndrome where things are thrown in their face or they cause them to drift off their main focus. And basically those that are the most successful in life and anything are the ones that are most focused and direct. They say no to say yes to their thing. They say yes later on to things, but they're very focused. And that's one of the big things about if you want to find success, be focused on what you want to do. And sometimes to find that success or hit that rhythm or that income, whatever you're looking for, you got to say no to other things that are taking away and distracting you from your main goal.
Your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
I think is just giving. And it doesn't matter whether you're giving of time or giving money or just showing up. I think that's the biggest thing is this thing. It's kind of, I live here in the north part of Austin and I get up and I walk in the morning every day. And a lot of people, nobody knows their neighbors anymore these days. You know what I mean? We're all kind of inside, hiding out because of COVID. Well, with me getting out and walking a couple laps a day, I got to know my neighbors. And at Christmas time, a couple weeks ago, instead of gifts and stuff like that, I make cobblers, Christmas cobblers. All right.
Yeah.
And so I started making a list of people that I've gotten to know and friends. I was like, oh, I went from like four a couple years ago to now it's like over 20. So making cobblers and just showing up on people's doorsteps, say, hey, I know that, you know, we've got quite a few elderly folks that live here in the area that live by themselves and seeing them smile because they don't expect it. I'm not expecting anything in return except that smile and just seeing people like, wow, thank you very much. It was uncalled for. People are like, what do I owe you? It's like, you don't owe me anything. It's just me. Yeah. Trying to make a better day for you when you may have a rough day. And I don't think we see enough of that taking place in the world.
No, that's cool. Scott, this is a great conversation. I know you're certainly a wealth of knowledge. You've got lots of years of experience, tons of reps, if you will, transactions below you or beneath you. Say, for people that want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you, where can they go? What should they do?
Sure. It's really easy. I mean, if you go to weclosenotes.com, that's weclosenotes.com. That's my main website on there. We've got a variety of classes. We've also got the number one YouTube channel, number one podcast for note investors known as the Note Closer Show podcast with about 1.5 million downloads and coming up on 850 episodes here in the next incredible year or two. But if you really enjoyed this and want to learn more about it, I've got a one-day class that I'd love for you to take for free. No strings attached. It's me teaching the basics, or guys, I call it the Cliff Notes version of note investing for about 6 hours. You go to noteweekend.com. That's noteweekend.com. No credit card. Just click on the RSVP link and it'll send you to our free 1 day class for you. But one of the most important things you can do if you're listening to this episode and listening to this podcast, Neil does a tremendous job. And we as fellow podcasters, we love to hear from our audience. So do yourself a favor. Do him a favor. Hit that subscribe button and go on over and leave him a 5-star review. We want to hear from you. He wants to hear from you. And it's a little bit of saying thank you in the new year for all the hard work he's putting into this podcast. So do that for Neil and you won't be disappointed.
I appreciate that, Scott. And I'd appreciate that from you, the audience. And the links Scott referenced all below in the show notes for you. Scott, I appreciate your time. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, man. Happy New Year,
Happy New Year to you. To our listeners, pat yourself on the back. You guys have made it to the end of the show, and most people never finish what they start. If you receive value from today's show, be sure to share it on LinkedIn, your Facebook page, or your social media platform of choice. Subscribe to never miss a valuable episode in the future. And if you found value in today's episode, give us a thumbs up with a positive review. If there's a particular topic you'd like to hear about, well, I want to hear from you. Shoot me a message on LinkedIn. The link to my profile is below in the show notes. You can connect with me there for more valuable content.